Look, there we are. We're on the screen.
We look great.
Do we look great?
Yeah.
Don't know about that. I don't know how this is going to go. We didn't tell anybody we were going to be doing this live. You didn't even know we were going to be doing this live. So that's part of the adventure of the Godcast, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, everyone wanted an emergency episode.
Yeah.
So here you go.
Well, we are here. We're at the Great Lakes Collectors
Convention.
There's a lot of C's in that. I struggled with that last year, too. Great Lakes Collectors Convention. We are in Independence. We're going to be here for a little bit. So if you're not too far away, stop in and see us. If you live where I live, we're going to be gone by the time you get here. Zach has already ripped me for that. But we're here to talk about Shane Bieber, I guess.
Oh.
Oh, is that a surprise for you?
I mean, the Guardians are 7-2. God forbid any media in this town has any shred of positivity in their analysis.
Well, okay, bring the positivity then. What do you got for me?
I don't know. Bieber's out for the year. The eclipse is coming. It's going to get dark, and it's never going to get light.
Thank you. We'll be here for the rest of the hour. Thanks for hanging out with us. That ray of sunshine was brought to you by Zach Meisel. I'm TJ Zuppi. You guys are familiar with the show. If we are broadcasting live and it sounds good, not our voices, but just you can hear us, let me know. So with the equipment, I'm not sure if it's working. But let's actually talk a little Shane Bieber here, because through two starts, looked fantastic. 20 strikeouts over his first two starts. But yet, going back a few shows, we had mentioned that starting pitching and pitching in general, especially in the way baseball is in this day and age, guys are healthy until they're not. And it was always a risk, a little bit in the back of your mind with Bieber, because he's coming off of last year and he's had issues before staying on the field. You had hoped that just by the fact that he is not part of the team for the end of last year, had a full off season to potentially recover and get back to where he was. He goes to drive line. He works his arm up in a way that he's throwing with a little bit more added velocity. And then he comes out in his first two starts, and you're thinking, this dude's back. You wrote it. We said it on the show many times. Bieber's back. He's back on the IL, unfortunately. And it's a big blow for this team that has a lot of now question marks in their starting rotation, which, as great as the offense has been in the first week plus here, the backbone of this team is still going to be how far the starting pitching takes them. And that's your ace now. He's gone off the board. We can talk about what that means for him long term and where he's going to fit in with this team, if at all, in the future. But what about for this team that's actually playing well to begin the year? They just lost their ace for the entire season.
There are a lot of tentacles here. And I think, first of all, when we sized up this rotation coming into the season, we said two things. One, ceiling is super high. If Bieber is back, and he looks like that, you have McKenzie healthy. The three sophomores, we both thought Gavin Williams was going to have a breakout season, and then that might still happen. Tanner Bibee was excellent last year. Logan Allen seems like a solid guy. That rotation ceiling is top three, four in the league, we said. But we also cautioned that it's a very fragile group. It doesn't take an expert to see that. You have three sophomores. There's some learning to do, some regression that's possible there. And two injury-prone starting pitchers who you're hoping anchor the rotation. So Bieber is the perfect embodiment of both of those classifications. He was dominant in his first two starts, looked like the guy I thought from 22, who maybe the stuff is different, not as explosive, but just pitching like an ace, like a guy who can lead the staff to the playoffs. And what we didn't know was that he was doing it through a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And there's some Deshaun Watson 14-14 with a broken shoulder vibes there, where after the Oakland start,
yeah,
he didn't bounce back the way they were hoping. They offered him an extra day. They offered him some increased treatment. He preferred to pitch on his normal day. And as that start against Seattle went on, he was feeling more and more discomfort. And the next day it wasn't subsiding. So it's interesting. I mean, it's why he only threw, I think, 83 pitches in Seattle.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. We knew there was some big news coming.
Yeah, you told me that.
You try to guess what it's going to be. I think at this point, the assumption is just, it's probably McKenzie's elbow because of the way he rehabbed it last year instead of having surgery. I threw some emojis in the Discord, which always gets people riled up.
Yeah, so that's what I need to know. How do you choose what emoji to drop in there when you're going to drop a hint of some sort?
To be honest, it's pretty random. There was one time...
I like people trying to decipher what the hell you're doing.
The first time I did it, I think there was like some distant connection. And then each time it's usually just like... I don't know. I want to like send out the bat signal like, hey, you're going to be hit with some news soon. But I don't want to give too much away, and I don't know. Snails were like,
why the snail?
It's been a great start to the season, but slow your roll a little bit.
You're just kind of stuck there. You can't really move that fast.
Yeah, this is going to hurt. It's going to...
A snail? So, like, what was the old, you could throw salt on a snail and watch them turn inside out? Was that...
Sure, so this is salt on the wound.
Salt on the wound. Okay, fine. We'll take that.
All that went through my mind when I... picked that emoji, sure.
Well,
I did not expect this, though, what I'm saying.
No, well, you told me that, and I said, well, what did McKenzie high-five Gavin Williams in the dugout, and now both their elbows exploded?
No,
well,
it's the third elbow guy.
I'm sorry, the third one. And that's part of what is scary here, because the starting pitching has been really good coming out of the gate. I mean, Shane Bieber has looked phenomenal, and now you don't have him for the rest of the year. You're already concerned about Gavin Williams in that he's... You don't know when he's going to be back, and you could tell me that it's because of something that happened with a weighted ball or some sort of training. Okay, but I'm still alarmed. I'm still a little bit alarmed. Now you have Tristan McKenzie, who, even if he's back, he has not been throwing with the velocity he had before he spent pretty much the entire season down last year.
I need every starting pitcher to sleep in bed at night with your arms at your sides. None of the, like, arms under the pillows, stretching your... elbows like this, and or, you know, something great, like on your side with it, like,
okay,
like
do that, yeah.
Nothing like that, because it's elbows are so fragile, and it's an epidemic going around the league right now, and I know it's not this way, but it feels like every ace, Cole,
yeah,
Strider,
exactly,
McClanahan, Bieber, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I'm by means no expert to here that can look at arm troubles around the league and say, oh, well, that's clearly because of the pitch clock, or it's because of guys throwing at their max more consistently. Yeah, and maybe it's a combination of all of this stuff, but I'm not smart enough to be able to figure it out. I know it's something that's been happening for a long time, and it has seemed to just ramp itself up to unforeseen levels to begin the year. And you can take away just for a fact that Guardians fans are devastated. Shane, I'm sure, is devastated. The team is devastated. But also, baseball fans, I want the best pitchers in the game to be able to make their starts every 5 days. And it's tough to, you know, everybody in baseball is good. Everybody, one of the best baseball players on the planet, even if you're the worst player in Major League Baseball. But watching mediocre pitching, watching great pitching, the way that Shane had pitched in his first two starts when he's striking out 20 guys, and he's not even your traditional strikeout pitcher where it's, oh, well, that's just incredible power. Watching him operate in the surgeon-like precision of his pitches, and watching him set up people in the art of pitching and surprising people with a four-seamer when they think a slider's coming, something like that. That is phenomenal to be able to watch that. And now, as a baseball fan, we don't get the opportunity to see that anymore.
Yeah, I think you can look at the individual and say, man, talk about terrible timing. This was... He set himself up to have a big contract year, did all the things you'd want him to do, and all those things can benefit the team if he's at the peak of his powers because he spent the offseason at Driveline and he dug into things that maybe he needed a second outside opinion on, like his curveball grip or some of his mechanical tweaks that he made, and he looked the part. Like, he looked like I was believing again that this was a guy who was going to get 7 years, $175 million, right? And then that's gone in an instant. And it hurts the team, too. So you think about, you know, when he's resisting their extension offers in previous years, or it gets to a point where those talks don't even really happen because both sides know where they stand, and it's crazy. This was the worst-case scenario where he considers maybe a few years ago in the past, but, you know, what are the odds of that happening? There's a much better chance that he's a good pitcher and he goes and cashes in, and now you have to completely reevaluate. And for the team, I don't want to make too much of a 7-2 start, but aren't they playing in a way where hasn't it completely transformed your expectations on what's possible?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. If they were still struggling to hit and they were 4-5 and it was a lot of like 3-2 games and stuff, you'd be like, this kind of seems like last year. There's just like a spark and energy with this club, and it could all come crashing down. They could go on a 5-game losing streak and then you're right back to where you were. But
we had enough doom and gloom to begin the show.
But I think because, you know, the energy's great, the way they've hit the ball is great, but it is the pitching that allows you to think, you know, the way this is going so far, if Bieber is back, it buys you time for McKenzie to get right, for Gavin Williams to get healthy, for Tanner Bibee to maybe go through a little bit of growing pains. You don't have that time now. You know, your linchpin of the rotation is done, and you need, like, McKenzie's the most, I said he was the most important guy. He won our bracket. That's tenfold now.
Yeah.
And it just puts a lot of pressure on other people, and I feel like you need, the margin for error was razor thin coming in. Maybe it wasn't as thin as we thought because Bieber was back. The offense looks a little better than we thought. But now I feel like it's right back to razor thin because they don't have the pitching depth.
Yeah, and I know people have complained about the audio. I can't hear it live, so you guys are my only eyes and ears here. But if it is messed up, I'll put this all together later so you'll be able to just watch the regular video later. The saving grace is you play in the American League Central Division. So even if you lose your ace, that doesn't have to mean that your season is over, which you could say, well, that's unfair to everybody else in every other division. Well, sorry, that's just the way it's drawn
up. Yeah, but imagine a playoff series with what the Bieber we saw for two starts.
Oh, I know. It takes you to an entirely different level. Yeah. A team that, you might squeak in with 87 wins, let's say, but when you have a Bieber and maybe a Gavin Williams and a Tanner Bibee, you can get in and make some noise in the postseason. We have seen, who had the Diamondbacks reaching all the, if you get hot at the right time, we know it's the refrain, then you just have to worry about getting in. And then the rest, who knows, might take care of itself. And when you have great starting pitching, makes it a little bit easier. Now, this also positions them, if they continue this wealth of success that they've had at the beginning of the season, they could be at the deadline looking for a starting pitcher.
Which that might happen anyway.
You predicted that before we ever got word of what was happening with Bieber, so props to you. You thought they were going to be looking for pitching.
Jesus Luzardo?
I had seen people in our Discord. Join the Discord, by the way. Get to patreon.com/selbyisgodcast.
Get those emojis.
That's right. People in the Discord, I had seen some floating the idea of just trading Manzardo. Use Manzardo as your piece to go get another ace pitcher.
Zardo for Zardo?
That's what I had seen.
Wow. David Fry, full-time DH?
What's worked out great so far.
I never know what the Marlins want to do.
No. Do the Marlins ever know exactly what they want to do for consecutive years?
What about Khalil Watson?
You want to trade him back? Yeah, okay. We'll see how that works. Let's get into what this means for Shane. I know it's not always the trendy thing to think, oh, well, feel bad for the player here, but I actually sort of do because he did everything right. When your body betrays you, what are you supposed to do? He goes, it's not like it's for some sort of laziness that this happens. He worked his ass off at Driveline. He committed himself. He knew this was a big year for him. And to get even close to the payday he ever envisioned, he had to come out and look like that first two starts for the entire season. And even if he's not the 2020 guy, and a lot of that might have been just because it was a later start and he knew he could just empty the tank a little bit more because he only had 2 months to do it, a lot came together that maybe created that Frankenstein's monster of what became Bieber's 2020 season. But even if he was 2022 Bieber, he was going to get paid. Maybe not like he would have gotten paid coming off of 2020, but he was going to get paid. That level of starting pitching is still coveted. And if he had proven himself healthy and still able to throw a little bit harder and all the things we saw with the first two starts, it would have set himself up for living comfortably for the next several years. But now, boy, he's in limbo. We're talking about, is he going to sign a one-year contract with somebody and then he has to, maybe it's a pillow deal, maybe there's an option, maybe it's a two-year contract, but he's certainly in a place where he never wanted to be, and there's a lot of uncertainty for him. I think there's a lot of uncertainty for the Guardians, too. Could this have increased the chances that he sticks around past this year.
Yeah, because I think the chances were zero, and so now that's non-zero.
0.00001.
I mean, if you okay, so there are good examples of pitchers like Brandon Woodruff, Tyler Mahle, who coincidentally, if he would have signed, if he signed with the Reds out of high school, if he wasn't going to, if the Reds didn't offer him $250,000. He would have gone to UC Santa Barbara, and there would not have been a spot in the rotation for Shane Bieber,
wow,
a walk-on there. And now, Mahle had Tommy John, I believe last May, is targeting a midseason comeback, signed a two-year deal with the Rangers. The first year is $5.5 million, knowing he'll only pitch, you know, 2 months maybe. And then next season, he's under contract with the Rangers for $16.5 million. So it's a two-year, $22 million deal, backloaded, knowing he's going to miss most of this season.
Right.
Could that make sense for Bieber? Woodruff re-signed with the Brewers. It's a very complex deal where he's signed for this season. I don't know if or how much he's going to pitch this year. He had shoulder surgery, which is always more of a question mark. Then the Brewers can exercise a club option for next season. But that would come, it's like a $5 million club option with a $10 million buyout for the following year or a $20 million mutual option. So Woodruff would have to be on board and the team would have to be on board, or the team just pays him a huge chunk to go away, or he rejects it so that he gets. So there's a lot of, you know, I'm sure Bieber wants as much control over this as possible. The one thing that you could say is if you're going to go through this and rehab and come back, Cleveland seems like a pretty good place to do that. Familiarity, like you've spent your entire career in one place, right? Then you have this major injury. You've already had major injuries where you've had to rehab with the organization.
Right.
So you rehab with this team and then you're going to just go somewhere new where you don't know the people and you're going to hope that they help round you back into form and that's the best spot for you. That's why, like, I do think there's a chance here. I think a lot of it depends on what Cleveland wants and how they feel about this. I mean, we've seen them rehab pitchers before, whether it was like Gavin Floyd, Sean Markham.
Oh, you're not painting a pleasant picture here.
No, but I don't have a good example of someone in this scenario with this much success.
But
like Scott Kazmir.
But I think that plays into it. I agree that it raises the chances from none to that much.
Yeah.
However, isn't there a team, I will be skeptical of it, isn't there a team that can better absorb the risk than Cleveland can? Yeah,
of course, many. But how, what is the individual comfortable with? You don't know who the trainers and pitching coordinators and rehab coordinators are in organization.
I understand that. But there's another side. There's another side of the coin. There's a third side of the coin somehow.
What kind of coin is this?
I don't know. It's the one you would go to Vegas and use it. I don't know. So the other side of this coin, and I'm going to lose my train of thought just because you threw me that direction. The other side of this coin is if you're Bieber, you don't know if you're ever going to come back and pitch to any sort of good level. So, yeah, maybe there is a comfort here with Cleveland. But if Cleveland's offering you something that's just way too low.
But we're not talking about like 20 million versus 60 million. We're talking, what's the max he's going to get in this situation? He missed a significant time in 21, 23. He's going to miss almost all of 24, and he's going to miss a significant chunk of 25. That's
right.
4 out of 5 seasons.
Right.
Who's going to give him a huge deal?
But that's my point. In that case, and I'm just using numbers here, $12 million or $5 million, that's a huge difference because you're talking about, once you get to lower levels, the difference between like $5 million at astronomical levels is not that big. But if this might be your only chance to earn any sort of money, yeah, I might increase my chances a little bit just by being with Cleveland. But if it's not to any sort of level as what the Dodgers are going to give me, I'm going to take the offer from the Dodgers. But there's also there's a fourth side
of
this
coin. What kind of coin are you using, man?
The fourth side of this coin is there's also a qualifying offer that's out there. So we have for a long time said, well, if you don't trade Bieber, you always have that qualifying offer to fall back on and feel like if he walks out the door, you still get something for him. Well, now, they could still offer him the qualifying offer, but in this case, if you're Bieber, how would it benefit
the Guardians?
Team? it's some level of control of...
You're going to pay him $20 million to not pitch for you?
But that's my point. You've now... They've been
he
put
would
into
love
a,
that.
He would have been put into a situation, or the team has been put into a situation where you feel like you at least had that in your back pocket. And you're going to get something. Now he's going to walk away. He's going to sign with another team to rehab his arm. You're going to get nothing out of it. So he's now left, and you got nothing out of it.
That was the risk you took by not trading him earlier last summer or during the offseason.
Okay, is there a scenario here?
Or the winter before.
Where it does make sense to offer him the qualifying offer?
No.
None.
But you could use that as leverage, maybe, and instead say, hey, why don't we just come to terms now? I mean, you could come to a contract extension agreement during the season and say, let's do this 2 years, 24 mil. We'll give you $6 million next year and $18 million the year after. And even throw in a mutual option or something after that.
Right, right.
But I think for Bieber, he's making $12 million this year. It's not like he's... I don't think there's that big of a difference for him in terms of what he could get the next 2 years. He still has a chance to hit a big contract at the age of, what, 32?
Right. Right, exactly.
Where, no, it's not going to be $200 million, but maybe he gets like a four-year, $100 million deal if he is back to the way he was. So the question is, how do you get to that point where you set yourself up? And if I'm him... I probably, like, the Dodgers have a long track record of rehabbing guys. It's probably them, or it's Cleveland, right, where I'm familiar. But 28 other teams, like, I have major questions. And I just don't know if some team gives you 2 for $30 instead of 2 for $20, if that would make sense. We're also talking about this as if the Guardians would be in on this.
Right.
And I have no idea. Like, well, are they, so, where do they feel like, so first of all, part of this relates to the organization's pitching depth, which is not what it has been in years past, because you had Allen, Bybee, and Williams all come up last year, and then there's a gap. You know, Cantillo's hurt, Espino's hurt. Like, there's not a wave coming. That's why they're relying on Curry and Lively and Carrasco, for God's sakes.
Right.
So where do you think the rotation's going to be in 2026? That's what they have to ask if they would want to commit $15, $20 million to a recovered Shane Bieber 2 years from now. That's a lot to think through.
And the maybe the biggest unfortunate part of all of this is the fact that the team is playing so well right now. You don't want to be thinking about it. You want to be focused on the fact that they played so well coming out of the gate. Now, we record this on Sunday morning. We obviously don't know the outcome of Sunday's finale in Minnesota yet, but the fact that you've already taken two from them, that has to feel really good. The pitching, as we've mentioned before, has looked very, very good coming out. The bullpen, you've been able to piece it together, hasn't always been pretty. The walks on Saturday and the hit by pitches. I mean, Minnesota's ripping their hair out, and we see our pal Dan Hayes tweeting out the
he was
umpire
ripping
score
his hair out too. I think
the umpire score, and it was like, oh, there's 2+ runs for Cleveland, and that was the difference in this game. Okay, you already got Minnesota talking to themselves. Because you come out of the gate and you've handled your business. You're supposed to do that in Oakland, fine. But you went to Seattle. You went to the team that's the top of this division, at least in terms of they won it last year. So you want to take care of business against them. You're coming home. There should be a lot of good vibes with this team. And I don't think this completely takes the Bieber news completely takes away from the beginning of the season. Maybe especially not in that clubhouse. But it's still to have the sort of start that they've had. You haven't even played at home yet, and there's already
one off day.
And right.
Usually you've had like 4 by now, plus 3 rainouts.
I think so. Knock on wood. See what happens later today. You should be feeling only positive vibes. And that adds to the unfortunate element of you lost your ace. You lost your ace in what should be a really good time with a manager that's experiencing success in his first 9 games so far of the season.
He didn't die. And it is... It's a huge loss. This is a guy who could have a 5-win season as a starting pitcher, no doubt. So you need to have guys step up.
Right.
And the pitching depth is already shaky. But I like the team's resolve. They do have, like, this is not good analysis, but, like, they have a good vibe, good energy about them.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, that, no, it's very good vibe right now.
I think where you'll feel it most is probably when you get to, like, July or August and you just have a stretch where the pitching's not good or someone goes on the IL with an oblique or something stupid, like they tripped and fell out of bed.
Stupid
and
oblique.
Broke a toe. You'll have that, and then you'll really be tested. And that's where you'll miss Bieber in peak summer form, where he's going 8 innings and throwing 110 pitches. Like, that's where you'll miss him most.
And think about the level of pressure, you alluded to this earlier, that it puts on Tanner Bibee, who we said the biggest key element to him and why I felt so great taking him in our war draft was the fact that I felt like, of all the guys in this rotation, I felt the most confident that he's going to post every 5 days. Well, boy, yep. Oh boy, you better hope that he does. And not that we have any indication that he won't, but that just adds to the pressure. Logan Allen, he's got to do kind of what he did in his most recent outing, where, what's up, Hayden Grove, our pal, stopping by. Daryl Ryder, our pal from 92.3 The Fan. Say hello to the people at home, Daryl.
Daryl, can you give us a quick 45-minute diatribe about progressive field architecture and the progressive signs?
I think they added a progressive field sign for each year that naming rights deal got extended. Like, I mean, everywhere you look, there's a progressive field sign. It's beyond obnoxious.
They always say you want to know, like, be where your feet are, know where you are, right?
Isn't there a saying that you have to say something 10 times before the brain remembers it?
I guess. I don't know. But, I had this conversation with Guardians officials the other day at the What's New event that
they
held.
Love that.
I'm shocked.
They were very appreciative of all the attention I brought to their naming rights partner. But, yeah, I mean, it's been the same name for years. Like, I don't think that there's any mystery where the Cleveland Guardians play baseball on the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. But, you know, hey, and they got some video boards and some other stuff that they're, you know, working on adding. And, you know, I think fans are going to like the renovations, though. I really do. They did a nice job.
Thank you, Daryl.
You bet, guys. Good to see you.
It's a good to see you.
Very passionate about this topic. I love getting him going in the press box.
Today's game is officially postponed, by the way.
Yeah, it was trying to read a text discreetly to not be rude.
You don't want to give away your sources? Oh, no. Okay. I read you.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Logan Allen, you got to do what you did in your most recent outing. The days of, well, he can only go 3 1/3 inning because he gave up 47 foul balls.
I don't know. Carrasco threw 78 pitches in 3 innings and the bullpen was fine.
But that's the point. That's the point.
You can't do that every day, but it was hilarious to do that because you could get away with it Saturday because you were coming off an off day. And all you did was just, like, tweak the Twins, just torture them all day. That's the best way to win a game, isn't it? The Guardians had no business winning on Saturday.
Oh,
and to pull that off. And now this gets postponed, and the Twins just have to think about it for another day.
Exactly. And then you get to come home, and everything's positive, and you're feeling all the great vibes aside from Shane Bieber. This is a completely different topic, but it just came to my mind as I was getting ready to leave, and a highlight popped up of Andrés Giménez. I know we've said before, move him to shortstop because it just makes for an easy transition, and we know he's going to be good over there at shortstop. I think the Guardians have fully committed themselves to believing there's an added advantage of having a second baseman that can do those sorts of things at second base. And, yeah, he could probably do similar stuff over there at shortstop.
Do you think he's got a stronger arm than Rocchio, though?
I don't know.
That's the only reason why.
I don't know. Can we line him up
like swap
NFL pros? Pro Bowl style skills competitions to see who has the harder throw. I don't discount that. I don't fully buy into it either, whether or not there's an added advantage of just making sure you have the most elite second baseman, and whether or not would Andrés Giménez be among the elite at shortstop, and is there something to having the best defensive second baseman, or just like in the upper third at shortstop defensively. But I know with my eyes I've seen that guy at second base physically change the game with the plays that he makes. I know he missed one at second base, the throw, which he would catch 99 times out of 100, but that dude is a difference maker defensively, going back to what we used to say about Miles Straw. I can physically see the defensive run saved. It's not something that comes together fractionally behind the scenes. I see him saving the runs.
It's what I saw with Rafael Palmeiro in 1999 when he won the Gold Glove Award. Oh, wait, he was DH for all but 30 games that year? What? I would love to see them make the shift even more limited just to see him cover more ground. Or can he start a game at second and short? I just want to see, I want to see what he can...
At the same time?
Yeah. I want to see him start as far over as possible and get to a grounder.
Okay, so if you are the only shortstop and second baseman, do the shift rules apply? Does he have to stay on one side? Does he move based on lefty-righty?
I just want to see him start at third base and, dive and stop a ball up the middle. The best is when he makes a play that's so good, he can't hold back smiling or laughing about it afterwards. He tries to play coy and act all casual, this is what I do. And then the camera sticks on him for an extra few seconds. And he breaks.
As the year went on last year, I think he started to believe, I'm that guy defensively. I can be that sort of game changer. And I think it really helped him emerge. So I think you have to have a little bit of that. I know ego has a negative connotation to it, but I think you have to have a little bit of that ego to do the play he made yesterday when you flip it out of your glove backwards. You have to be like, yeah, I do this kind of thing. Yeah. This is me. Otherwise, you go, what the hell is this guy doing? But for him...
It did bounce a couple times. Couldn't he get that in the air?
All right, then let's get out a glove right now. I want to see you going up,
but it's
moving
those plays,
to your right.
It's the plays that you can't practice.
Yeah, right, exactly.
There's no practicing that.
Unless Omar Vizquel would do that, where he would kick it up to himself or do some silly stuff.
I mean, it's even Omar was tweeting about Rocchio and Giménez's defense.
Yeah.
Now he's doing a lot of buttering up on social media these days, I feel like I've noticed. But that's high praise. And I always am careful to pronounce someone one of the greatest defenders I've ever seen. I remember getting into an argument once with someone about Vizquel versus Lindor. I said Vizquel's the best I've ever seen, but Lindor makes some great plays and I felt like he had a stronger arm.
Sure.
And someone yelled at me and said I deserved to die because I was okay. I said that. But
I think Omar would admit he didn't have the strongest.
But with Giménez, I don't know. This guy's getting up there in that Vizquel territory, is he not? Is that crazy to say?
Yeah.
Wait, it is?
No, I'm agreeing.
Is it fair to say?
Fair to say,
fair to say.
Yeah. I just know that
it's a treat to watch.
That right. That I just love him, seeing him, his ability to change the game on the right side of second base. And again, would he be able to do that at shortstop? Probably. But is there something too, because the throw is shorter? Do you have more of a chance to make those sorts of plays because of where you're at on the diamond? If you're over at the shortstop, you can get to the ball, but then you still have to be able to leap, get it over the diamond, get it across. But as opposed to when you have a guy that can go so smoothly to his left and to his right, and how many times it looks like the out of a – or it looks like the base hit – no, sorry. It looks like the out of a couple of years ago with the shifting, where you would just position the second baseman in the hole. Those balls over there still get caught by Giménez most of the time. He still gets over there. Whether or not he's got a slide, you do the slide, spin, throw, and they're always on point. And so do you think there's anything to the team believing not only that he looks good over, that we don't want to mess with him, but also we have created an advantage for ourselves by having that good of a defensive second baseman. And we hopefully have that at shortstop too, And I think Rocchio can make those plays. Maybe it's more about consistency for him. But you have gold now. Don't take that over there and start thinking about what you could have at a different position.
Yeah, and it's not
actually, you have platinum there.
It's
right
not
now.
Ahmed Rosario at short.
Yeah.
Where I think everybody was asking, why don't you just switch these guys? At least Rocchio's played short and he's been capable for his career. Or Arias is really good over there, so it's not as pressing. But I do think, I mean, the defense, like, without his plays,
yeah,
they don't win that game.
Exactly.
So it's the thing that's impressed me this season is so much of baseball is sequencing. It's having the right things happen at the right time, and they've done that. Fry hits his 3-run homer on a day where the pitching and defense somehow hold Minnesota to one run. He didn't hit the 3-run homer when they were already up 8-0 on Oakland. You get that. Or you get Saturday was the day where they wiggled out of jams. Whereas, you know, maybe they'll be up, they'll score 10 runs one day and they won't be able to wiggle out of jams, but that's okay because they'll win 10-8.
Yeah.
Like it's that sort of thing. So it's, I don't know, the sequencing is working so far.
A good team has to have some of that, but also when you have a good season, you just need to have some of that. And I think that's the point of the, well, we're looking to win 85 games every single year because maybe this is just the one year where the sequencing works out for you and you that gets you a few more wins and that's
sequencing
the next thing you know.
And
you're up into the 90 and 91. Well,
yeah.
Sequencing great, health not so great so far. But somehow, we'll see how they handle it in the starting staff. But the bullpen, for the most part, production-wise, has been doing what you could have asked of a lot of guys that have never been in this position before, or at least not at the major league level. And that applies to whether you're talking about Cade Smith, or you're talking about Hunter Gaddis, who's a starter, who is now being thrust into this.
Looks really good.
Exactly. And he just looks more menacing in the relief role. Yeah. He's lost the glasses. He's got...
He is so nice and soft-spoken.
But on the mound, that dude looks like he could just... I'm going to end you. And Tyler Beattie.
Yeah.
You know, we said, oh, is this a...
From non-roster invite to long relief to setup man in a span of 2 weeks. What?
I saw one splitter and I knew. I knew that was my eighth inning, man. But, I mean, Vogt has handled him like the eighth inning, man. He had an option to how he wanted to handle it. Barlow came out early, then Beattie, and then
Barlow. But Barlow faced the top of the order, too. I think that's something to watch. Who is facing the opposition's best hitters? You know, we're still trying to learn about the manager's preferences here.
Right.
And does he think about those things where it's, you know, you want the relievers you trust most facing the hitters that are the most threatening?
It's still meaningful. Yeah, okay, maybe he goes to Barlow because he likes the matchup better. But then Beattie's right there the next inning. So it's not like we're just trying to hide this guy. We are seeing that he envisions Beattie as being a bullpen weapon for them, at least early in the season. So much so that we're talking about who's going to fill this Bieber slot. We're not talking about Beattie, because how can you move Beattie or Gaddis out of two roles that have been very clutch for them so far?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's going to be Tuesday. They're going to hold
auditions?
With the rain out, I don't know. Maybe McKenzie goes Monday now.
Okay.
It's a third different starting pitcher for the home opener. It actually buys them, actually helps, because Logan Allen can go Tuesday. They can actually delay this decision for a few more days. But odds are it's probably going to be Curry or Lively. Curry threw 53 pitches in his rehab start, Lively 45.
Right.
So it won't be a fully stretched out thing, but you'll have someone who can go maybe 70 pitches. And then from there, although, again, the rain out could change this, and I might even have an email already telling me what it is, and I don't know, so don't yell at me. But the question is, basically, can Carrasco plus whoever else, Curry, Lively, am I missing anybody? I mean, this is where Cantillo could have helped.
Right.
This is where free agent acquisition X could have helped. This is where trade acquisition X acquired for a couple middle infield prospects 2 years ago could have helped.
Don't say Cal Quantrill.
No, but I can you hold down the fort till Gavin Williams comes back? Because he's still a month away? At least more than three weeks.
Are they slow playing him on purpose? With the intent of, as you said,
this is a added...
Is there
any other way to play an elbow injury right now?
Well, that...
You want to fast play it?
Well, if you're thinking we desperately need another starter in this rotation, perhaps. But my thought is, going back to what you said, when the injury, or however you want to term it, first happened, is it a blessing in disguise that you now can maybe lean on him a little bit more later in the season, as opposed to, ooh, how do we get this guy through 180 innings? Now you're reducing it by 3, 4, 5 starts.
Could be. I just know I would be scared shitless by any elbow injury. So, I mean, that's why McKenzie was the fifth starter coming out of the chute.
Yeah.
Same thing. So, there's a lot of pressure on those guys, right? If you're Tanner Bibee, don't you feel like you got to be the ace and you got to go innings?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean,
he handled it fine last year.
He was
thrust into that position for this team, and he answered the call better than you could have ever imagined.
Sure. It's a little different doing it from day one than doing it with less pressure because he was a rookie and the team was going nowhere. You're 7-2 now. You're not
going nowhere.
Well, they were
picking up guys at the waiver deadline. And
do you think that's what doomed Lucas Giolito? He felt like he had to pick up the slack.
Might have.
20 runs
another,
later.
Another injured arm. Yeah, there is a lot of pressure, but to their credit, they've handled that pressure pretty well. And we used to say about Terry Francona that he was at his best when the shit hit the fan. We've got to find that out now about Vogt. Now, it's not to the level of your starter's bleeding on the mound from his pinky and you're out there talking about who's going to win the 50-50 raffle. But this is the first step of, hey, you're going to get some adversity thrown your way. How do you handle that? And we've said, really from the jump, and we've really got to meet him and talk to him, I don't question his ability to do that sort of thing.
No.
I think he can handle that pretty well.
Because you get experience at that as a player. You're rallying the troops in the clubhouse when you hit adversity. And it's not too dissimilar when you're the manager. It's just saying the right things at the right time. And I know he allowed them to sort of, I don't want to say grieve, again, this is not a funeral, but he told them, like, it's okay to not be okay. But we got to have the next man up mentality and all those other cliches athletes love. And I think the guys know, I mean, because they've been through this. Like, Bieber was hurt last year.
Yeah,
like,
it's not new.
I know that there aren't many players left from 2016. It's Jose and it's now weirdly Carrasco. But it's not like they sat there moping in September of 2016.
No, they didn't have time.
How are we going to do this? Oh, no, Paul Hoynes just said we're done. I guess that's it. Let's go home.
With Jose celebrating.
Yeah. So,
They didn't have time to. It's just, that's part of it, too. Maybe a different sport, it's easier to dwell on it. But in this case, okay, you can feel bad about it, but you got to go out there tomorrow and play.
And it helps when you're 7-2. If you were 2-7 right now and you lost Bieber.
Hi, Ryan Lewis.
I mean, you're probably like, well, this season's shot. But yeah, you actually have something to play for. You're off to a really good start, and go chase it.
Yeah. I wonder if, I can't believe we're ranking how much something hurts, but does it hurt less when it's a pitcher because you're impacted every 5 days? As opposed to if you say this team, God, I don't even want to say it out loud, but say this team lost Jose Ramirez for the entire season, you'd feel that every single day.
No, because they have 74 middle infielders who could play third. They don't have 74 starting pitchers. I mean, I see what you're saying. They're just going to have to find other ways to win. Like, you need to have a dominant bullpen that we predicted would be one of the best in the league.
And it's played out.
We knew it would be
exactly.
Gaddis and Cade Smith and Tim Herron and Tyler Beede. We called that.
And you know what's exciting? More on the way.
Yeah.
More hard-throwing young arms on the way for this team.
Yeah. Andrew Walters, Franco Alamán. Don't sleep on Nick Enright, who has, like, struck out every batter he's faced at AAA so far. Who am I missing?
I feel like there's one. No, it's not Smith. Yeah, let us know. I don't know if we feel like we're missing one off the radar. But the
trade acquisition to be named later.
Remember years and years ago? Puck? It was a bullpen full of guys that couldn't break a plane of glass with their
pitch.
Yeah,
it was like Nick Wickren was their hardest thrower with like 93 mile an hour heat.
Tyler Clippard was in there for years.
Brad Hand was down
Blake,
to 92.
Blake Parker, whose ball would never rotate on the way to the, because it was, he's not throwing with a ton of velocity here. To go from that with all the veterans they've plugged in over the
Ghost.
Years.
Oh, Ghost. Don't forget about Ghost.
Ghost.
How dare you?
How dare
By
you?
By the way, an update. My son, who's been memorizing the Guardians media guide, he's still 1 year old.
We need to make this a weekly segment.
He thinks Anthony Ghost is a funny guy, just based on his smile in the media guide.
Okay.
That is not how I would describe Anthony
it
Ghost.
Doesn't seem very intense.
Very intense.
Very
scary.
Intense.
Like
the fire at the circus. Shout out to Bruce Chen.
And maybe he could fill Bieber's spot.
Well, he definitely doesn't want to pitch against the Guardians anymore because they've proven they can hit the soft tossing lefties
right.
now. Well, thank you for hanging out with us. I know I don't even think anybody actually heard this show live, but as I said, I'm going to take this later and put it out. And now that there's no game today, this will still exist. But thank you for being here, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, if you're catching us there. If you want to see the video version, if you want to see all the guest celebrities that stopped by.
I got to go buy some bobbleheads.
You got to go buy some bobbleheads. And I think we need to do something with that.
Oh, I'm going to try to find the most random one I can.
So I think what we need to do, Zach, last year I walked with you and I saw what you purchased. Then we came back later and did like a little add-on, just audio-only version.
Is that an unboxing?
It was an unboxing. We'll do
can I get YouTube famous
I'll put
for
the
that?
Camera up here. We'll do ASMR style. We got the black tablecloth already. We'll tap on the mic and do all sorts of things. I want you to go walk around and then I want you to bring it out and you'll just surprise me with what you bought. And we'll do that for just video-only format. So get to YouTube. Selby is Godcast, search us on there, and later this week, I don't know when, it'll just be a surprise. We'll have the little unboxing of Zach at the Great Leagues Collectors Convention, and we'll see what you got.
That'll be great, because I actually had a dream last night.
Oh my goodness.
That it was the eclipse, and I, for some reason, forgot to put on the glasses and burned both my retinas and can't see. So the audio version will be very helpful.
Okay, well, don't do that. Don't do that tomorrow. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. I'm going to go walk over there and stop the video. Zach, you just make pretty faces over there at the camera.